This is Fresh Air. It's shaping up to be quite a moment for Percival Everett. His 2001 novel Erasure was made into the acclaimed film American Fiction, and his latest novel James has just come out. It's a reimagining of Mark Twain's 1885 classic, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Our book critic Maureen Carrigan has a review.
Ernest Hemingway was not known for his generosity to other writers, but even he felt the need to humble himself before Mark Twain. In 1935, Hemingway famously declared that all modern American literature comes from one book by Mark Twain called Huckleberry Finn. It's the best book we've had. All American writing comes from that. There was nothing before. There has been nothing as good since. Hemingway was talking about the slangy, cussin' voice of the novel's narrator, Huck Finn, who spoke a blunt, funny American dialect that leapt off the page. But just imagine if the other passenger on that immortal raft ride down the Mississippi had taken over the narration. American literature, and perhaps America's sense of itself, really would have been upended had Twain allowed the runaway slave Jim to have his say. That's the premise of Percival Everett's magnificent new novel called James. Admittedly, the strategy of thrusting a so-called supporting character into the spotlight of a reimagined classic has been done so often it can feel a little tired. We've heard from, among a multitude of others, Ahab's wife, Daisy Buchanan's daughter, Father March, the patriarch of those little women, and Bertha Mason, that poor mad woman in the attic who terrorizes Jane Eyre. So when is a literary gimmick not a gimmick? When the reimagining is so inspired, it becomes an essential companion piece to the original novel. So much so that you can't imagine ever again reading one without the other. Such is the power of James. Everett, like Twain, is a first-rate humorist. He begins his novel by merrily exposing the absurdities of racism through language lessons that James conducts with his little daughter and some other children. It's crucial that these kids learn to put on a slave filter when they talk, because as James says, white folks expect us to sound a certain way, and it can only help if we don't disappoint them. James then tries out what he calls situational translations with the children. You're walking down the street and you see that Mrs. Holliday's kitchen is on fire. How do you tell her? Fire, fire, January said. That's almost correct, James said. The youngest of the children, 5-year-old Rachel, said, Lordy, missum, looky dare. Perfect, James said. Why is that correct? Lizzie raised her hand. Because we must let the whites be the ones who name the trouble. Another child adds, because they need to name everything. This sly comic tone predominates throughout the first third or so of the novel, which also sticks pretty close to the root of Twain's original plot. Huck, running away from his abusive father, teams up with James, who's learned he's about to be sold away from his family. Together, the two hide out on Jackson Island and then embark on the Mississippi, braving violent storms and towering riverboats that suddenly bear down on them, as well as the pursuit of slave catchers and con men. But gradually, the familiar rafting voyage veers off into newer, more ominous tributaries of the mighty Mississippi. James realizes that he's envious of Huck's naivete, his ability to be highly excited by the adventure of it all, to feel that in a world without fear of being hanged to death or worse. Of course, the stakes of their shared journey were always different for Twain's Huck and Jim and Everett's Huck and James. But Twain chose not to dramatize the racist barbarity of antebellum America. Everett does. alternating mordant humor with horror, he makes readers really understand that for James, the Mississippi may offer a temporary haven. But given the realistic odds of him reuniting with his family and making it to freedom, the river is most likely a vast highway to a scary nowhere. Though Jim achieves the victory here of naming himself James, there'll be little chance of him simply lighting out for the territory.
Maureen Corrigan is a professor of literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed James by Percival Everett. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, we'll talk about what it was like to be a nun in a Carmelite monastery for more than 10 years. My guest will be Catherine Coldstream, author of the new memoir, Cloistered. I hope you'll join us. I'll close with some Fresh Air news. Producer Seth Kelly is leaving us. He has a great new job, which I'm not yet at liberty to disclose. We all love him and hate to say goodbye. Over 6 years ago, when we were interviewing him for the Fresh Air position, we had no doubt he was the one to hire. It was obvious he had a great personality. He knew a lot about pop culture, he was fun to talk with, and he could write. If you read our newsletter, you know how lively and funny his writing can be. And he has a big heart and such a generous spirit. He knows so much about music, from Beethoven to Boy Genius, and lots of new bands I've never even heard of. Seth plays French horn in classical music ensembles. Whenever I did a classical music-related interview, I'd talk it over with him. I remember once in preparation for an interview with conductor Yannick Nézet-Séguin, we went to see him conduct the Philadelphia Orchestra rehearse a composition by Nico Muhly. When the composer handed me his iPad with a copy of the score, I was delighted and immediately handed it over to Seth. Through our tears, we're all wishing him the best and are genuinely happy for him. The Happy Sad Fresh Air team is our executive producer, Danny Miller, our technical director and engineer, Audrey Bentham. Our engineer today is Adam Staniszewski. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brugger, Lauren Krenzel, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, Thea Chaloner, Susan Yakundi, and for the last time, Seth Kelly. Our digital media producer is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. Our co-host is Tanya Mosley. I'm Terry Gross.